This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News! From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
John Kitzhaber says the state's challenges aren't red or blue, but green. A false alarm leads NASA to lock down their Ohio facility. And Nicaragua accidentally invades Costa Rica because of Google Maps.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, take cover, for this is Legion of News.
Remember, the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Also, I have to remember to get my things martinized later.
I'm John Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, November 5th. 2010. John Kitzhaber said in his acceptance speech Thursday that an evenly divided legislature creates a historic opportunity to create a political center to deal with pressing issues. In a Wednesday morning address, he called for a move away from partisan politics, noting that the challenges facing Oregon are not red versus blue, but rather about green. In January, Kitzhaber faces a state House and Senate chamber equally divided by political party. I actually think it's going to be easier to deal with budget crisis, he said, of trying to cut across party lines. He spoke for several minutes in a Northwest Portland park backed by campaign workers. Can we swim upstream or what? He said with a smile as he approached the podium amid cheers, likening us apparently to salmon. Today marks not the ending but the beginning of our collective efforts to put our state back together and build a strong foundation. As he claimed victory, he said he's ready to take on the challenges of the state's budget deficit, high unemployment, and divided legislature. He also said he wants to give children the tools to be successful in school and then later in the workplace as they grow to adulthood.
I don't really care about any of this, but here's the thing. Because Dudley lost, and I'm feeling magnanimous, I'm going to give a little gift to Oregon Republicans. This is just something to kind of keep in mind for the next time election season comes around. Sort of, in the spirit of both Jim Henson and Joe Bluth. Republicans, here's a free idea from Rick Emerson to you. They ought to record some sort of a song, and then with the accompanying YouTube video, that's like a "It's Not Easy Being Blue" kind of a thing. And that would be all how difficult and laborious it is to be a Democrat, because you have to constantly be foisting your ridiculous ideas on people, and you have to twist yourself in knots to, to be tolerant and give your money to...
Have you considered a big wuss?
You know, welfare queens or whatever it is the Democrats are accused of doing this year. So there you go. Republicans, that's your idea. It's not easy being blue. That's a Rick Emerson original. You can have that.
Police say a lockdown at a NASA research facility in Cleveland was a false alarm. Lieutenant Don Michaloski with the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Office says a message was misunderstood Friday morning while NASA was conducting a test of its automated emergency notification system. He says someone who received the message didn't realize it was a test.
Nope.
Michaloski said that he didn't know the specifics of the message, but says a story spread that there was a gunman in the building. The all-clear announcement went out shortly before 11 a.m. at the sprawling NASA Glenn Research Center next to Cleveland's airport. A retired NASA Glenn safety officer says false alarms are common at the complex.
What message could they have misunderstood that would have been construed as there's a guy with a gun in the building? Like when you're low on toner or there's no turkey left in the cafeteria?
It could be one of those things that it was like a code plaid and it means that there could be an intruder. And then somebody goes, I don't know, maybe that means there's a guy with a gun in the building. And somebody else said, holy crap, there's a guy with a gun in the building.
Code plaid is really just that you need to go snake the toilet.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
An error on Google Maps has caused an international conflict in Central America. A Nicaraguan military commander, relying on Google Maps, moved troops into an area near San Juan Lake along the border between his country and Costa Rica.
Are we entirely certain that this story has been vetted by Barbara Mickelson at Snopes?
Well, it was forwarded to me by an alert
listener. Well, no. I think we can just stop it. So, it was forwarded to me.
Yeah. So that.
Really? Wait, how many greater signs were there before the actual subject line?
But it has been widely reported in far more respected media than us.
It was forwarded and it was widely reported. Is there something in there by being impregnated by a black man via 3D porn?
Can I just read you the story?
Well, I see no way of stopping you.
Let's pretend for a moment that we believe this is true.
Okay. Well, that's what I do with most of the news, so.
A Nicaraguan military commander relying on Google Maps. Okay, I already built to that part. The troops are accused of setting up camp there, taking down a Costa Rican flag and raising the Nicaraguan flag, doing work to clean up a nearby river, and dumping the sediment in Costa Rican territory. La Nación, the largest newspaper in Costa Rica, says the Nicaraguan commander, Eden Pastora, used Google Maps to justify the incursion, even though the official maps used by both countries indicate the territory belongs to Costa Rica. Pastora blames Google Maps in the paper. They offer actually a satellite photo, which you can find online, which shows you the difference between Bing Maps and Google Maps of where the recognized border is. Apparently, the Bing Maps has the actual official border. Google Maps, not so much.
I think I now understand the provenance of the story.
Oh, yeah, it was Bing. Uh-huh. Those bastards at Bing. They're spreading...
Doesn't that seem like exactly the kind of thing that Microsoft would do, though? Is that they would, through some sort of viral marketing that, you know, that you and your troops would be exposed to gunfire and death at the hands of infidels or, you know, whatever, just because you made the mistake of using Google Maps or MapQuest, God forbid. Hey, let me ask you this, Don Taylor.
Ask away.
Who is it that... do you know the answer to this? Who is it that owns MapQuest, or from where does MapQuest get its information? Like, is that a Microsoft... joint, or is it related to Google Maps somehow? It seems like it predates both of those things.
I believe it's owned by Jack Klugman.
Okay, fair enough. That would explain, first of all, the strange diction with which the thing speaks to me, because I got the, I have the TomTom, the GPS for my car, which is
a terrible name for a product.
But, you know, it's one of the most glorious consumer products I've ever owned in my entire life. I mean, it's fantastic. It's wonderful, which is why I feel a little bit of, I don't know, I feel a little bit of guilt. Quite a lot of guilt, actually, sometimes. This is the anthropomorphizing of consumer electronics. Because that TomTom GPS, which I got like maybe, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, was so wonderful because you just took it out of the box and it's like the iPhone. You just take it out and it just worked. Didn't have to load anything. Didn't come with a disc. Didn't come with a startup or anything. Didn't even come with an instruction book. It was just like a thing on the screen saying, like, here you go, have at it. And it was like, you just put in where you want to go, and it takes you there, and it speaks in a clipped Australian accent.
And yet you still manage to get lost.
But that's when I don't have it with me. That's the whole thing.
That's not true.
It is.
You got lost following me to a McMenamin's once.
Here's the thing. I'm telling a story now. But that's okay. You've ruined the momentum, so we'll just move on to something else. Don't worry about it. No. Don't worry about me and my need to actually, convey an anecdote. That's okay. No. That's fine. I'll reroute around that, and I'll find an alternate route to get to the destination of humor later on. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday. Coming up later on in this hour, we'll have Science of the March, also entertainment news. We've also got this program via your handheld device. If you need it later on via iTunes, you can do that. You can also get it as an MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Only weeks after the Juan Williams affair, another news anchor has gotten into trouble for failing to hide their political affiliations. MSNBC host and liberal commentator Keith Olbermann donated $7,200 to three Democratic candidates before the midterm elections, according to Politico, violating NBC policy that forbids employees from making political contributions. Olbermann admitted to making the first $2,400 donations in a statement obtained by Politico, noting it was the first time he had ever given money to a campaign. One week ago, on the night of Thursday, October 28th, after a discussion with a friend about the state of politics in Arizona, I donated $2,400 each to the reelection campaigns of Democratic Representatives Raul Grijalva and Gabrielle Giffords, he said. I also donated the same amount to the campaign of Democratic senatorial candidate John Conway in Kentucky.
This just seems like a stupid rule. What is the... When you consider the fact that Keith Olbermann is less... I mean, he's not really, you know, he's not really a newscaster at this point. I mean, he's just an editorialist. And if you consider the fact that he uses his program, which I don't have a problem with, but he uses his program just as a forum to ream Republicans and to therefore sort of to engage in a de facto promotion of, you know, of Democratic candidates, which if he were to charge for that time would be like $5 billion at this point. Like the idea that he's giving him $7,000 out of his pocket, it seems like a negligible sort of a problem. Like, who really cares?
Yeah, well, it falls within, though, this whole stricture that NBC prohibits employees from taking part in what they call in civic or other outside activities on the grounds that it might jeopardize impartial journalism.
But he's not an impartial journalist.
No. He's not.
That's just, all right.
But it's weird.
It's a blanket NBC policy.
That's just one of those. That is one of those things from an earlier era when we believed newscasters to be above the fray and to be without opinion and to be moral and forthright and upfront about things. I mean, it seems like you would want it the other way around. That you would actually want it to be known who they voted for, because then you could take their newscast with the appropriate grain of salt. That's like that crap how the Oregonian. I mean, I don't mean to pick on them, but we were just talking to somebody about this the other day. I guess it was actually Kelly Clark. We were talking to her about the Willamette and about their editorial pages in the newspaper. And they do that jive where they just like signed it, the Oregonian Editorial Board, which is ridiculous because then it paints everybody at the Oregonian with the same brush. So if you were to read the Oregonian editorial stance on whatever, you would assume that, let's say, Anna Griffin agreed with it, even if she did not. Seems like whoever writes the editorial on behalf of the paper should have to identify themselves so that you know which reporters are and are not taking that particular stance when they report the news.
Absolutely. And also, it seems also kind of ridiculous when we all know that the parent company of NBC, General Electric, pours millions of dollars, you know, into campaigns for politicians. But their tertiary employees can't give like $2,400 to a state candidate.
So lot to be said for dictatorship, Don. Hmm.
Recently completed tracks that connect the Portland streetcar line between the Pearl District and OMSI have created changes in the traffic flow through one of the state's most densely populated neighborhoods. New signs, lane markings, and signal configurations are all in place and are having an immediate effect on drivers, cyclists, and public transportation lines in the area. One of the major changes is on Northwest Lovejoy, which is now one-way eastbound between 13th and 10th Avenues. Some cyclists in the area have had to find alternate routes due to changes in bike lane configurations. One cyclist said, "There's been a lot of construction. It's been difficult to find out where the new things are, but I like a lot of the things going in right now."
I like to speak in sort of vague, nondescript sentences that don't actually convey any real information and stuff.
The new loop covers a distance of 3.3 miles and includes 28 new streetcar stop locations. If you are curious about the stop locations and which direction the streets go and all of that nonsense,
not it.
There's actually a website, portlandstreetcar.org.
And the streetcar is different from the MAX. How?
It's the small little trolley thing.
It's the green thing.
Yeah.
The thing that goes through. But, I mean, what is there a... Is there some practical difference between the two?
Well, yeah, the MAX is light rail. It's a big train, and they actually go faster, and they use completely different tracks.
It's a streetcar thing just for downtown?
Yes, it just has a smaller route.
Okay,
there's the one that goes through Northwest, and now there's the one that's going through
All right. Does this affect me driving in my car, or is this a bicycle thing only?
No, it affects you driving your head. Sometimes when I'm leaving downtown, for example, when I'm at the lovely Cascadia.fm penthouse suite, when I leave, I drive straight down whatever that street is there by KUF, where KUFO used to be, or I guess it still is.
Oh, I guess it's like Lincoln or something.
Yeah, and there's a streetcar track that goes straight down to the waterfront.
Right.
And that's where I almost hit a guy on a bike because he was, like, riding his bike in front of me, and he crossed the tracks and got his bike caught in the light rail, the streetcar track, and just went down like a sack of rocks in front of my car.
So this is on Lovejoy, where they've just taken a whole section of, they've made it like one way or something.
Yeah, between 13th and 10th, it's one way eastbound. Wait,
I can tell you, like, of all the times I spend lost anywhere near downtown, it's always right in that area too. Here's the other thing that always screws me. It's if you're on like, I don't know, the Crystal Ballroom or like 14th and Burnside or whatever that is, and it's like there's the five different lanes. And it's like some of them turn left and some of them go straight and some go into the 405 and there's like one that turns right. And I never pick the right one ever. It's like when you go to that, I guess it's less of an issue right now because it's closed off anyway, but there's that weird Burnside Sandy, you know, it's like you're on one of those Hot Wheels tracks where that you're playing with your brother where the whole point is to get the two cars to go through the, you know, the roundabout crossover thing at the same time and then one of them flies off into a million pieces. Right there by like the Imago Theater or whatever it is. And it doesn't matter how far ahead or how many times I change lanes, I always end up in a lane that takes me the direction I don't want to go. God forbid that happens to you also when you're headed, whatever, west on Burnside. Because it's like if you miss your last turn, which is by like Jackpot Records or something, you're going to end up in the West Hills before you can ever take another left because they've just cannily decided to close off or to make illegal all of the other options for you to turn left.
And if you're coming the other way, there's that one section where you want to, like, turn right to go, like, towards, like, the PGE Park area. And if you turn at the wrong spot, it's not the Crystal Ballroom, but it's the other, like, wedge-shaped building.
Yeah.
And you turn right there and you kind of go, I'll just go here and go. And then you get to the end of that block and it goes, no, you can only go left and go back onto Burnside. And you're going, but why?
But come on. Yeah. No. Just because the city was designed by drunks, son.
Stupid traffic.
You're listening to Legion of Dews right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program storms the airwaves via rickemerson.com. Today, our 100th episode since beginning this iteration of the program. That is 100 today. So for the low cost of 32 cents a day, you too can be amused by our humorous stylings and endeavors later on in this afternoon. That is 1 o'clock following this program. Coming up today, we'll talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig. He's going to be in the studio with us. We'll also have top five songs about autumn and so forth. You can find out more at rickemerson.com. This is Legion of News. This is Don Taylor.
One of the rescued Chilean miners, Edison Pena, is in New York to run in Sunday's New York City Marathon. On The Late Show with David Letterman, Letterman asked Pena if he had ever taken part in a marathon before. He answered through a translator.
A big marathon like this one? No, never. Little ones. This is a huge challenge. Yeah.
But you know, I've never run a marathon, but I do know that the people, when they see you on the course, will give you the support to finish.
Responding through the translator to Letterman's question about whether any of the miners got on his nerves during the ordeal, he said this.
Off the record, there's always a bad apple.
That's right.
But I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
I don't think somebody understands what off the record means. I think the translator's doing a shoddy job of conveying the meaning there.
Don't tell him I actually said this.
This is not for air, Dave, but...
An airport official says an aircraft bound from Portland to Dallas, Texas, was diverted after a report that a passenger became unruly. Spokeswoman Barbara Gann said American Airlines Flight 1476 landed at Salt Lake City International Airport about 1:30 p.m. Thursday. Gann said she wasn't aware of any threats to the plane or to the 146 passengers aboard. She says the pilot of the MD-88 decided to land in Utah after a male passenger refused to comply with directions from the flight crew. Gann says the man and his bags were removed from the flight, and FBI agents and airport security were interviewing him. The airport official says the flight was expected to resume travel to Dallas later today. Forest Grove police say they arrested two people suspected in a string of car burglaries. After surveillance video from a Target store in Hillsboro aired on Fox 12, police say tips started pouring in about the people in the video. The video shows a man and a woman pushing a cart full of merchandise and a young child sitting inside. Investigators say the goods they returned had been stolen from a car in Forest Grove. Officers say the stolen items still had tags, making it easy to return them. The tips led police to Jeremy Covey. Hillsboro police say they took him into custody today for outstanding arrest warrants. Detectives are now investigating Covey's connection to the series of thefts from cars. Police also arrested the woman in the video, but aren't releasing her identity yet.
So they were stealing things from cars and then trying to return them to Target?
Yes.
So these were, I don't understand, why were the things still in the cars? Why were the things still tagged and packaged if they were just sitting in the car? you know, unattended.
Maybe somebody had gone shopping in at Target, and they still had big Target bags in the backseat of their car.
Oh, I guess so. Maybe they'd just gone home and just left them outside for some reason. So they weren't actually, these weren't actually, like, stolen from people as they were leaving or something.
No.
I thought they were doing sort of a great kind of conveyor belt, sort of as people come out, it's like out comes the gun, and they just take the stuff and then walk back in with it.
That would be good.
All right. That wouldn't be good. You shouldn't do that. It would be inventive. It would be creative.
My favorite part of the story is that then they had the surveillance video from Target, and they showed it on the news.
Everybody knows it.
And everybody's going, I know that guy.
That's Crazy Ted from down the street.
That's Covey. He's an idiot.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, and this is all true. Coming up later on this hour, we'll have entertainment news for you, and you can get this program via iTunes later on. It's brought to you by one of our fine business partners, that is CJsHighClimbing.com. CJsHighClimbing.com. You can get a hold of them at 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. That is CJ's High Climbing Services. And here's a little truism. Here's a thing that you may not admit to others. You may not even admit it to yourself. But you probably go out of your way to avoid spending large amounts of time with members of your family. Maybe not all of your family. Maybe not the entire family. But there's probably certain members of your family that, you know, you see them for a little bit every now and again at the holidays. But if you don't have to spend a whole lot of time with them, that's considered a win for you. That's one in the plus column. Here's the thing that's going to make that more difficult, is if your dad decides to fracture both of his hips by falling off the house because he's cleaning out the rain gutters. That's going to end badly, because then you're going to be, like, ladling soup into his mouth and having to, like, you know, give him a sitz bath or something. And it's like, you don't want to do that. This is nobody's idea of pleasant.
I thought for a moment that you were going to, the lead-in was that CJ's High Climbing, because they do take on many unpleasant jobs around your house, that one of the services they provide is they will come and remove your annoying family members from your house.
They'll sponge off your grandmother for you. No, but it's just a thing, you know, it's like everybody's got the dad who, you know, and I think this is a dad thing more than a mom thing, where dads just don't realize that, you know, that they're octogenarians and that, you know, and maybe their insides are half dust at this point and aren't really going to support them the way that they need. So they clamber up into the roof, and then the next thing you know, it just sounds like a bundle of twigs hitting in the ground outside. Sort of like your Angry Birds thing, except it's not so much birds hitting pigs, it's just your dad hitting the sidewalk. Mm. And then you just find yourself, you know, having to, like, you know, chew his meals for him for the rest of his life. And you don't want to be doing that. So you just preemptively, hey, here's the thing. You know, you got your Thanksgiving coming up, you got your holidays coming up, turn of the year, whatever. Maybe just as a preemptive holiday gift, you just arrange for your parents to have their, you know, the whether it's the roof or the gutters or the downspout or the drain or maybe the walkway. You get all that stuff cleaned off. You get it taken care of because it's, you know, it's messy. It's a pain. It's cumbersome. It's sticky. It's annoying. It's wet. It's whatever.
So or maybe some kind of a gift certificate. I'll bet they would accept some kind of prepayment. So you could say to Dad, you know, Dad, next time you're thinking about doing something stupid, call this guy. Here's like $100.
Here's the thing, though. You don't give that to Dad. You give it to Mom. You give it to Dad, who'll blow it at the track or on a whore somewhere. When you say Dad, the next time you think of doing something stupid, he doesn't hear the rest of that sentence. He just hears the next time you're thinking about doing something stupid and the fact that you were giving him money. So you get that to Mom. She'll make sure that something sensible is done with it, such as recruiting CJ's High Climbing Services to come take care of that, so your dad doesn't maim himself. Unless that's the sort of thing that she wouldn't mind see happening, so maybe she can go off to Reno for a while with the girls. I don't really know. That's between them, I suppose. It's 503-228-9278 or cjshighclimbing.com. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for science news.
Awesome. Here is your science on the march.
All right, here. It is Friday. Here's science on the march for Legion of News.
A potentially dangerous hydrogen gas leak during fueling today caused yet another delay for the Space Shuttle Discovery's final voyage, possibly until the end of the month. It was the latest and most serious problem to hit NASA's oldest and most traveled shuttle over the past week. Another launch attempt will not be made before Monday. Midway through the fueling process this morning, hydrogen gas began leaking from where a vent line attaches to the external fuel tank. It's the same type of problem that forced delays for two shuttle missions last year and had not reoccurred since then. Discovery's final mission already had been running 4 days late because of technical and weather problems. Launch director Mike Leinbach halted the countdown 2 hours before fueling began. These six astronauts had yet to board the shuttle. Swiss adventurer Yves Rossi has completed two aerial loops using a custom-made jet-propelled wingsuit. Rossi jumped from a hot air balloon above Lake Geneva today and performed the daredevil stunt before landing safely with a parachute. He declared himself very happy and satisfied at Friday's stunt, which comes 2 years after his first successful flights over the nearby Swiss Alps.
I know this sounds like a dumb question. What is a wingsuit?
I'll show you in a moment.
Okay. We have a photo?
He basically has a suit, and he's got wings attached to him with, like, big tanks of, like, jet fuel attached to the wings. It looks very, very unsafe. The 51-year-old former fighter pilot and extreme sports enthusiast has flown across the English Channel and last year tried to cross the Strait of Gibraltar from Morocco to Spain. That attempt ended in failure when Rossi ditched in the sea due to strong turbulence. And there he's wearing his wingsuit.
Okay, so it's like he's wearing, it's like he's wearing a sort of miniature hang gliding thing that also just has rockets on the underside.
It's very Wile E. Coyote.
It really is. That's pretty awesome, actually. That's the kind of thing that's either going to end in fantastic triumph or unbelievable, hideous failure.
Apparently he's pretty successful. He flew across the English Channel. He flew across the Alps.
Hey, let me ask you this. This is a thing that I think is true every now and again, but then I realize that there's like an equal chance that I'm just hallucinating it. Is it now possible to buy a jetpack?
Sure.
But do you know that is that actually the kit? Like, could I go online and just order? I don't mean like to have a guy build me one. Like, is there a company that's actually just selling like a consumer jetpack? Because it seems like I read somewhere that, wait for it, the Japanese have made a thing like that you can just strap on and just sort of, you know, use at your own risk, I suppose. But I don't really know if that's actually true or if I just sort of assume that it's true and so therefore my brain has told me that it is happening.
I think it might be like real girl dolls or something like that. That they're so expensive, they actually custom make them for you. I don't think they just have a factory where they have them sitting around.
All right.
But, I mean, I can't imagine that they would take that long to deliver anymore.
But you don't know that it's not necessarily an established consumer product at this moment.
I don't believe it is.
Okay.
No. I could be wrong, though. There could be, like, a place called Jetpack World in Tokyo.
All right.
We should find out about that.
Okay, we'll look into it. And it's just I was thinking about that the other day, actually, and about whether it's... Because it seems to me... But then, here's the thing, is I think that I might have actually then conflated that with that episode of Arrested Development, where what's his name? It's like George Michael or whoever has the jetpack, and then he lands, and he's, you know, they have the model homes outside, and he ends up battling Job, who's in some sort of Godzilla costume, and the Japanese investors are there.
Yeah, that might be why you're thinking about it. I don't know.
We should
also find out if somebody locally has a jetpack and find out what it would cost or what it would be involved in, like...
For us to take a ride?
You.
Okay.
Really?
Oh,
not,
I see.
Not me.
All
you.
Right. Okay.
Just so we can see what it's like.
My head is just one giant episode of Dream On, though, where I can never really tell what's real and what I've just seen on television. Here is Don Taylor.
Beer may have helped lead to the rise of civilization, according to some archaeologists. Their argument is that Stone Age farmers were domesticating cereals not so much to fill their stomachs, but to lighten their heads by turning the grain into beer. That has been their take for more than 50 years, and now one archaeologist says the evidence is getting stronger. Signs that people went to great lengths to obtain grains, despite the hard work needed to make them edible, plus the knowledge that feasts were important community-building gatherings, support the idea that cereal grains were being turned into beer. This is according to archaeologist Brian Hayden at Simon Fraser University in Canada. Beer is sacred stuff in most traditional societies, he said. He's planning to submit research on the origins of beer to the journal Current Anthropology. The advent of agriculture began in the Neolithic period of the Stone Age, about 11,500 years ago. Once nomadic groups of people had settled down and were coming into contact with each other more often, spurring the establishment of more complex social customs that set the foundation of more intricate communities. The Neolithic peoples living in a large area of Southwest Asia called the Levant developed, would evolve into true farming and more blah, 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 blah. Moving on. There's way more about Neolithic stuff here than I get to. Anyway, agricultural evidence suggests that until the Neolithic period, cereals like barley and rice constituted only a minor element of diets because they constitute like so much labor to turn them into something edible. So basically the idea is that once guys figured out that they could get drunk on it, they started really growing grains.
Which makes a lot of sense because for all of the stereotyping of the average pothead or whatever is just being some slacker, there's nobody more motivated than a guy who has to figure out a way to smoke something. As evidenced by every single guy that was ever next to me in woodshop class, who's like, no matter what you could have, there are guys. The thing about stoners is they're like a really, really single purpose, niche oriented MacGyver. You know? That it's like they can make anything into a bong. You could just give them, like, my headphones, my MP3 player, a shoe. It doesn't matter. You could be like, here you go. Here's the shoe, and here's some weed. You got to figure out how to smoke one with the other. And if you come back in, like, 15 minutes, they'll probably have figured it out. You know, and if there's no drugs to be found, as I think any of us who have dirtbag relatives can attest, if there's no, you know, if there are no drugs in the house, or, you know, if there's no money with which to buy drugs, they'll find a way to get the money. You know, it doesn't really matter.
Just a way to get wrecked.
Yeah.
Even though I guess, you know, there's alcohol in this vanilla extract. Yeah, I could just drink this.
Does your mom have nutmeg?
You know, and if you don't, you know, like, you know, or you just seen spinning around on the lawn 100 times and falling over and puking. Why? Brother got to get high. So it doesn't really, I mean, that is the carrot at the end of the, of, you know, the humanity evolution stick, I think.
All right.
That's all of our science for today.
Really? We're ending on that?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. There's your science on the march. Here at Legion of News. Awesome. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show's 100th episode comes up. And by the way, let's disabuse everybody right now of the notion that there's going to be something spectacular, exciting happening.
I have a special gift for you.
Do you?
I do.
I don't have anything for you. That's not true. I have those potato chips that taste like ham.
There we go.
Wait, hold on. Let me make sure that I brought those with me. Oh, and? Okay, here's what I have. Hold on. Right here, these are, let's see, these are called, Sabor e Jamon, which I believe is Ruffles Taste of Ham.
Ruffles taste like ham.
Here's where she got these, by the way. So my wife got these when she was in, Spain. This is on the same day that she went to, but not at the place where she visited. In other words, these were not from the Museum of Ham, but these were from the same city. By the way, oh my God, so she was, it was that thing last night that you do, which I'm not complaining about, but it's one of those things that can either go really, really well or really, really poorly, where I sat through vacation photos. And sometimes that just sucks. But the great thing about my wife is she knows exactly, like, she doesn't just sit there and go like, and here's a waterfall. Because the things that people take photos of in their vacation typically don't ever, they don't translate to just, you know, like sitting there and watching a slideshow.
No.
Where a guy says, and here's a big field. And it, you know, it's like, unless you're in the thing, the photograph, it doesn't do you any good. And really, even if you are in the thing, the photograph does you negligible good. Like, when have you ever sat and looked at your own vacation photos? Like never. Because they're always of, like, nature. And I'm not trying to knock nature. I'm just saying that's a thing, you kind of got to be in it. I mean, unless you're Ansel Adams, whatever photographs you've taken have not, they're going to understate the significance of the thing. She knew exactly the kind of stuff to take photos of. For instance, lots and lots of photos at the Museum of Ham. Also, there was an apartment building that she passed in, what is it called, Sevilla? I guess is the name of the city. As she's in Sevilla, there was an apartment building. It's in Spanish. There's an apartment building, though, just called For the Love of God. And she took, like, four different photographs of that for me because she knows what Rick likes. Anyway, so in this bag, I have
ham-flavored Ruffles.
With ridges, Dawn.
I like that the back of the page has the food the back of the package has the food pyramid on it. So you know how healthy your ham-flavored Ruffles are.
Here's the thing about this food pyramid. It doesn't make any sense because at the top, there's, like, some fire, and at the bottom, there's, like, a broom.
Well, they have a different food pyramid in Spain.
I guess.
There's your sweeping group, and your flame group.
There's your Amazo the Clown group.
Your cooked group, which is at the top. Hot sauce is the tip of the pyramid. You don't want to eat a lot of hot sauce. It's a condiment only.
And then the fruits and vegetables layer of the pyramid is just cherries. All right, so there you go. But so in this bag, I have potato chips that taste of ham. I have several mystery foods. Ooh. So they're from Turkey and Spain. I don't know what they are, but the children on the package look really, really happy to be eating them. And then I mentioned this yesterday, that she bought me the best Halloween mask. And it's too late to wear it this year. Or is it? I almost don't want to show you now. I think you should have to wait.
Okay. That can be my gift, that I could see the Halloween mask.
Here's the thing.
And ham chips.
I know it sounds like I'm overselling it, especially because, again, Halloween was like last week. She said that she almost, this is how perfect the Halloween mask that she bought for me in, and I think she got it in Turkey. This is how perfect a gift it is for me. She said she almost paid like the $450 or whatever to like overnight it to me here in Portland. She did not, thankfully, but it's quite something. So that's right here. Okay. So we'll get to that next hour over the Rick Emerson Show's 100th episode. You can find out more about that or subscribe at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
We have a happy news item.
What sort of happiness is this?
It's a dog story.
They're all dog stories.
Yeah.
I never use any of these other happy bits.
No.
All right.
Someday we will. A service dog reunited with her owner Thursday after disappearing in Hillsboro the previous week. Maxine Gannon could hardly contain her excitement as she waited for a dog to come outside the Bonnie Hayes Animal Shelter. She says her Siberian Husky, Dreamer, has helped her save her life in the past by warning her of oncoming seizures. She says her Siberian Husky, Dreamer, has helped save her life in the past by warning her of oncoming seizures. Gannon says the dog would pull her down and bark, giving her time to prepare herself for the seizure. Last week, Dreamer found her way out of a friend's home in Hillsboro, and Gannon had been looking for her since. The dog made her way to the Bonnie Hayes shelter, where she stayed for a week. The shelter spayed her and was just one day away from putting her into the adoption program when Gannon found her. On Thursday, she showered the dog with kisses as the pair reunited. "I don't think I could go on without her," she said. "I felt like part of me was gone when I lost her because she's part of my life now, and I'm excited to have her home with me."
So the dog's name is Gannon?
No, her name is Gannon. The dog's name is Dreamer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's less interesting.
All right.
So there you go. And the Bonnie Hayes Animal Shelter people want to let you know that they have missing animal information on their website. So if you're missing your dog, you can go and look on the website.
The whole thing about the dogs being able to sense seizures is just weird. I mean, I'm not disputing that they can do it. My whole thing is, how do they discover that?
Can you make this music stop?
We're still on the dog story.
Okay.
I'm fine. Well,
we're talking about seizures now.
Is this more appropriate? How about this? How about
we...
Hold on. Wait, no, how about this? How about...
Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll never,
there you go.
Never walk alone. You will never walk alone.
All right, fantastic.
All right. I'm always interested in the dogs that help people with their diabetes medication, because when their blood sugar gets, like, totally out of whack, they smell differently. So the dog can, like, nudge and tell the people that they need their insulin so they don't go into insulin, you know, shock or
and
whatever.
See, which is great, but it's like, you do just wonder, like, how is it that that's even possible? You know, like, how did the scientists ever make the connection that that's what was happening? Unless they just figured... like from jump that, you know, well, dogs have this really, really finely tuned sense of smell. And so therefore, I don't know, like we'll find a way. But even if you knew, like even knowing about bloodhounds or, you know, whatever, just dogs in general, how they got the, you know, the sense of smell that's like 40,000 times, you know, stronger than that of humans or something. To make the reverse leap from that to like they're going to be able to smell your seizure before it happens is just, I mean, it's awesome. It's just sort of mind boggling.
What would be really handy is if you had a dog that would help you not do like things that just regular people who aren't ill do. Like if your dog could stop you from drunk dialing an ex, you know, or the dog could like stop you from making like a bad eBay purchase.
That's fantastic. Somebody should totally. Here's the thing. You could charge infinite amounts of money for a dog like that. You know, or like when a dog, or it's that thing when you're sitting there and you're at the supermarket and you're trying to figure out which of the items is actually the better value, because one of them is 17 cents per ounce and the other one is 42 cents per ounce. But then if you have a club card and you buy three, the other one drops by 25%. You know, and you're sitting there and you're just like knitting up your brow and you're trying to, and you're looking at your iPhone wondering if there's an app that can figure it out for you and there isn't. If they could create a dog that would do that, I myself would purchase it.
Yeah, just lean over and you say, mittens, yeah. Which one? Yeah. The first one?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, here is Don Taylor.
Pope Benedict the 6th, what is he, the 16th?
Sure.
Roman numerals are hard. Pope Benedict the 16th is coming to...
What does it look like?
It's an X, a V, and an I. That's 16th,
yeah.
It's coming to Spain this weekend, and in honor of the occasion, Barcelona's gay and lesbian community plan to greet him with a queer-kissing flash mob outside the city's main cathedral. According to the event's Facebook page, over 1,500 people have promised to participate in the two-minute makeout session when the Pope leaves the cathedral at 10 a.m. this Sunday, and an initial 12,000 people have been invited. When Benedict 16 passes in front of us, we will kiss man to man and woman to woman, organized Marilyn Carroll told Spanish news agency EFE. No placards, no flags, no shouting and no slogans, only kissing allowed.
Like that's the sort of thing that's going to be a big turnoff to the Pope. You know, Pope, I don't know, man on man contact, I just can't abide it. I don't like to see that.
Well, it is, you know, it is, I guess they, Yeah.
I mean, really, what is the, are they thinking he's just going to find it really, that he's going to find it off-putting?
They're hoping he'll just have a heart attack and just keel over on the
spot. Wears ruby slippers. I mean, I don't know if anybody's...
From Prada.
I mean, yeah, I don't know, rain on anybody's parade or something. I just don't know that that's necessarily going to have the effect of it. I don't really know that it's going to have the upshot that they're hoping for. But
well, I mean, it does serve the purpose of publicizing that you know, the Catholic Pope are a bunch of dicks.
He's a Nazi. He was, seriously, he was literally a member of the Hitler Youth. What else do you need? I mean, it's if you're willing to just sort of like, well, come on, who wasn't a Nazi? Have at it. I mean, it's like, what? It seems like that ship has sailed, really. Like, if that's, you know, that's like if the guy across the street from you, you know, worked at Dachau, but it's like, but on the other hand, he doesn't do his edging or clean up his leaf clippings. I mean, and that's just, you know, that's the final straw for me. It just seems like once you've gone to the Hitler Youth thing and it, you know, just sort of rubs people, I don't know, in an indifferent way, then, you know, screw it.
So if you, Rick Emerson, were going to organize a 2,000-strong same-sex kissing event, who would you target?
Is this going to be our big fall promotion and I'm just now hearing about it? In other words, who would I kiss in front of?
Well, who would you have them all, the 2,000 people, kiss each other in front of?
I don't know. I'm not really...
What or who would you protest with that?
I don't really know. Well, because it seems like by definition, there's only two kinds of people. There's people who are in favor of gay kissing, and there's people who are opposed to gay kissing. If you're in favor of gay kissing, you're not going to care. If you're opposed to gay kissing, it's like one and two that you're secretly a big fan of gay kissing. So it just seems like it's a misdesigned protest. You know what I'm saying?
I guess I can see that.
It just doesn't seem like it has the intended effect. But you know, what do I know? And this is happening where?
In Barcelona.
In Barcelona, the home of the Museum of Ham.
Exactly.
And of the for the love of God apartments and townhouses.
So after a little man on man kissing, you can go across town and enjoy a little ham bone.
Here's the thing. So Solar goes to the Museum of Ham. And she gets herself a large beer, and then with the beer comes some appetizers. And the appetizer, bar food is bar food, kind of wherever you go. The appetizers are just these, I swear to God, they're ham potato chips with ham cheese. And then on the side?
Ham?
Ham! I swear to God, ham on the side. It's like the best thing. And she has a photo of it here. She's like, well, this is beer. These are ham chips. This is ham on top of the chips. And then over here is a side of ham. And then you look at the guy behind the counter. It's the sort of thing that you would almost view as being like a novelty business, except that I guess it's been there for like, I don't know, like 170 years or something. I mean, it's not like, it's like the M&M store in Times Square, except those kind of things never last, because how many M&Ms can you really eat? How much ham can you eat? Apparently, like all the ham ever made. And there's a guy behind the counter, and he's just flanked. It's like that shot in Airplane of the guy at the Mayo Clinic, and there's just thousands of jars of mayonnaise behind him, and he's just sitting there with like hundreds of ham legs just sitting on the shelf behind him, just looking at the camera like, do you want some ham? It's awesome.
So, Tanya would love it there.
It's just one of the best things you've ever seen in your life. So this observation about the Museum of Ham, or the Museo de Jamón, is brought to you by Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland, many, many thousands of sad, sad miles from the Museum of Ham. But here's the thing. This is what I would suggest to you. I would suggest that if you feel like you've maybe got a lack of follow-through, or maybe you start things but you don't necessarily finish, or maybe you're like, well, what will keep me motivated to learn Spanish? I would say right now, you start putting aside money, maybe you and your spouse, your significant other, your whatever, you set aside money, you treat yourself to a trip to the Museum of Ham once you have finished your Spanish education at Castalia Language Center.
Then you can ask all kinds of questions about the ham.
That's what I'm saying right there. And then they could tip you to maybe other museums in the visit. Like if there's one, like there's a Museum of beer, or it's like a hall of dildos or something. You could go there and you could make it an entire trip of one specialty location after another. But you can't do that if you're just wandering around looking at a phrase book and just shouting things like an American jackass. So you go to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. That is the website for Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. So that means that you are going to be in a class with other folks who are learning at the same rate, in the same way, and they limit the class size to how many people, Don?
Ocho.
That's right. That's you and how many of your friends, Don?
Siete.
Excellent. So you can get near individualized attention, and they don't focus on just... You know, it's not like you just have to memorize some crap and then just, to speak it back. Because it's like you never understand what you're actually saying anyway. And it's like, here's the thing. The memorizing and then regurgitating long enough to pass the test, you know what that is? That's like when you go in and a guy just gives you a tattoo and you have only his word that it says, like, strength. And really it just says, like, douche or something, you know? It's like, you don't do that. You want to be able to actually understand what you're saying and use it in a colloquial way and use it in conversation. Again, for the love of ham. So find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com.
It's time for entertainment news.
Awesome. Here's your entertainment news. As though the preceding 45 minutes were not entertaining enough, here at Legion of News.
Movie bosses behind the Twilight series have threatened legal action against a businessman who has allegedly been posing as a Summit Entertainment executive and duping cast members into attending screenings. The executive vice president of Summit Entertainment, David C. Friedman, has written to New York-based Omar Amanat, threatening to sue if he continues to misrepresent that he is affiliated with the production company. The letter, obtained by Deadline.com, claims Amanat has screened some of the vampire films at, quote, charity events, and talked some of the franchise's stars into making appearances. It reads, Summit is prepared to take action against you for, among other things, misrepresenting your authority to screen the Twilight Saga New Moon at a charity event and misleading cast members into thinking the screening was a sanctioned event and soliciting their participation in auctioning off a set visit for the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn, which Summit has not authorized. The letter goes on to state, you are not a director of Summit. You are not in any way involved in the management of Summit unless you immediately and satisfactorily confirm that you will cease all inappropriate misrepresentations. Summit will have no choice but to pursue appropriate actions against you. Great scam, though. Julian Hugg, a contestant on The Bachelorette, was found dead in Riverside, California on Wednesday. The 35-year-old was one of 30 bachelors who vied for the attentions of then-bachelorette Jillian Harris in 2009. Harris tweeted yesterday, please say a prayer for the loss of a friend this morning. Life is fragile. Don't forget to love the ones you love. Hugg's corpse was discovered in a remote area off Highway 74, and he was reported missing for several days. Former Spice Girls member Emma Bunton, a.k.a. Baby Spice, is pregnant with her second child. Bunton announced the news on her Twitter page, posting, so our family grows. We are so excited to announce we're having our second baby, and Bo's wish for a brother or sister has come true. Bunton and her husband, former Damage singer Jade Jones, are parents to three-year-old son, Bo.
Did you ever realize you have a phenomenally useless skill that becomes more and more irrelevant by the year? I was able to early on and still can identify each of the Spice Girls just by voice when I'm listening to a Spice Girls recording. You bring me a Spice Girls song, I can tell you at any given moment which Spice Girl is actually singing right there. That's a thing that was useful for like a day and a half in about 1997. And then it was like about 6 months later that impressed no one. And it's just, but it continues to take up. It's, you know what it is? That's like some, that's like, you know, like some program you put on your Windows 95 machine. You know, like 15 years ago. And it just sits there because you can't quite, like, the uninstall file doesn't quite work. And so it just takes up space on your hard drive.
What happened to Scary Spice? What is she doing?
I don't know. I would just, that's a good question, actually, because I, what's her name? So Posh is married to David Beckham.
Yeah.
Emma Bunton is just sitting around apparently reproducing. Jerry Halliwell,
Politics.
Yeah, she went into politics and just hangs out a lot with George Michael. Let's see. So that leaves then, Mel C and, who's a Sporty Spice and Scary Spice, Mel B. Mm. And I don't really know the answer to that. Mm. I think that one of them, and I think it was Sporty Spice is doing, I think she's doing like the whole, like the Carnival Cruise thing where it's like just, she performs like, you know, Spice Girl songs and other favorites or whatever. And I believe, now I may be wrong about this. I may be conflating her with the guys from Right Said Fred in some weird way, but I believe that Sporty Spice is now, she's the on-ship entertainment on a Carnival Cruise Line that specializes in lady folk.
Oh, interesting.
If you know what I mean.
That's an interesting...
It sort of makes sense, right?
I guess.
Well, you know, that's what the Right Said Fred guys do. Those guys have the best... It's not even a scam. It's like they have just...
They just do gay cruises?
What a great life those guys have, the Right Said Fred dudes. Because, you know, it's like they had a little bit of stardom, a little bit of fame. Hopefully they saved some money. But even if they didn't, it's like they got a steady gig.
Yeah.
They never have to come up with new material because it's a different crowd every week. And it's just endless cruise ships full of presumably hot gay guys who just want to, like, just want to get their F on with whoever. And it's like, so there, it's just, you know, it's like a boatload of fresh meat, like every 5 or 6 days. And it's people who haven't seen them perform before, presumably. Again, so you got like a rapturous audience, you know, to whom you are brand new.
You know, at some point in the future, we should consider that. When we, like 10 or 15 years from now, when we retire the Rick Emerson show version this, we should...
Just take it onto a cruise?
Yeah, we could just live in a boat and do it on a boat.
Okay. I'll start saving now.
Shooting on the Tim Burton-directed film Dark Shadows, Burton's latest collaboration with Johnny Depp, starts in April. The movie, based on the ABC TV series, which ran from 1966 to 1971, centers on the life of a vampire named Barnabas Collins, who will be played by Depp.
Okay.
I don't want him to do this. I don't want either of them to do this.
I was trying to figure out right now. I was trying to take my mental, trying to get my internal barometer reading here, and I just...
Do we not remember what happened with Planet of the Apes?
I just think I don't care. I think that's the thing. I think I've come to the realization... Wait. Yeah, sources are pointing to indifferent. Here's the thing about Dark Shadows, which I watched religiously as a kid. You go back and you watch Dark Shadows now, it's terrible. I mean, that's a thing that people don't like to admit about stuff that they watched growing up. Some of the things you watch when you were a kid, they hold up. Most of them don't. Dark Shadows is awful. I mean, it's just not good. And I loved Dark Shadows. I really did. There are moments where it sort of veers towards quality, but then it just steers away quickly again. It's just not that, you know. And I don't have faith in Tim Burton, you know, as a general rule, because he's just sort of hit or miss. It just seems like it's happenstance if he gets a film right. I do have faith in Johnny Depp, though. You know, it seems like at the very least, his depiction of Barnabas Collins is going to be worth watching.
Oh yeah, but he's yeah.
It's just not a franchise that I care enough about to really get like exercised about it.
I just always still. It's like if there's. I'm sure you have this with music. There's someone that you loved so much over the years and who gave you such pleasure that you hear their name and you go, your first response is to go, oh, that'll be awesome. And then you remember, oh, yeah, wait. No, they haven't done anything good in like 10 years.
It's really not going to be awesome.
It's not going to be awesome.
No.
But you still have that knee-jerk response of like, and then go, oh, yeah, wait.
Yeah.
No.
And then you actually hear the new project and there's just that moment between, you know, figuratively speaking, between when the needle hits the groove and the sound comes out of the speakers, you go, maybe it'll be great. And then you hear it and of course it's not great. It's just more dreck. Yeah.
Aretha Franklin is canceling all concert dates and personal appearances through May on the order of her doctors. The news came 2 days after the announcement that Franklin had been released over the weekend from a Detroit hospital following a brief stay. Publicist Tracy Jordan said... Tracy Jordan? said Tuesday Franklin was resting comfortably at home, but is anxious to get back on the road to perform for her countless fans around the world. Jordan wouldn't say Thursday whether events were related, nor did she offer any details about the 68-year-old Franklin's condition. Her doctors have required her to cancel her appearances.
If only I'd known this was coming. I have all my gas as Tracy Jordan cuts that I would have. Except they're all about having sex with Sarah, so I just I would have had to. We required some editing.
Rework them in some.
Yes. You are listening to Legion of News. This is the entertainment news portion of the program. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. We'll be speaking with good friend Mr. Big Jim Willig. Also the top five songs about fall. That is the top five songs about fall. Also, I swear to God, potato chips that taste like ham. This portion of the program brought to you by Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 is how you can contact them, 503-252-1609. They are fully licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors who are able to come to your home and make sure that the first time you flip a switch, I don't know, the walls just don't burst into flames, which isn't like a thing that's probably going to happen anyway. But I mean, how would you really know? You don't know anything about electricity, do you?
Me? No.
No.
Oh.
Me either. You know, for all I know, it could just be filled with small gnomes inside running on little, you know, running inside barrels that are hooked to things outside that do a thing that turns a crank.
Honestly, God, I still get nervous changing light bulbs. Like, I have this weird, unrealistic fear that I'm going to just accidentally, like, slip my hand and jam my finger in the light socket or something and kill myself.
Do you ever do this? Do you ever have, where it's like you have 10 light bulbs, but you have 11 lamps or something in the house, and so you've got to move? I had to do this week. Actually, because I was like getting the whole place ready for, you know, for Laura to come home, and I was the living room was sort of, you know, it was too dim or whatever, and I didn't have any light bulbs, and she was going to be home in like an hour, so I had to go around looking for a light bulb of the same size from another room, and I had to unscrew it and move it in. But so now the lamp that's in my home office is actually sans bulb, so it's just got the open socket, and it's the same thing. And it's like, I mean, it's like 7 feet off the ground and also hidden by a lampshade. And plus, it's like on a bookcase. So there's really no conceivable way. I would have to trip and then hit a trampoline and then actually do some sort of a triple Lindy through the air and then land finger first in the socket. But that doesn't allay the fear that I will do exactly that.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's that is sort of the, you know what it is? That's the equivalent to this fear that everyone has. Everyone. Which is that when you are putting air in your tire, it's going to explode and take off your face. Everybody shares of it. It's not going to happen. Just like the thing at the light bulb isn't going to happen. But it doesn't mean you're not apprehensive about it.
And that's the thing. I'm afraid. I'm nervous about like changing light bulbs because I think I'll just jam my finger in the socket and die or something. Yet I will stick a fork in the toaster.
Is that true?
Yeah. I've been known to stick forks
in the toaster. But you unplug it first, though.
No.
Okay. Well, I think... I think I'll be enjoying the cruise for two, Don. Squires Electric, really?
Don?
All right, I'm going to make a note to myself. When Joe Squires in the studio with us, we're gonna have him talk to you about that.
I'm fairly sure he'll say, don't do that.
Yeah. 5, do you think? 503, do you do that while you're actually, like, between the rinse, wash, and repeat cycles of your hair, too? You just, hand me that toaster while I'm in here. I might as well. 503-252-1609 is how you contact Squires Electric. No job too large or too small. Everything from a single socket or, you know, whatever, all the way up to an entire building. They've done entire condominiums. They've done entire office buildings. So if you are moving into a different office, if you're moving into a different home, you want to make sure it's all up to code. It can handle whatever the electrical demands are, whatever the Ethernet demands are. And as you get into Christmas and the holiday season as well, if you're going to be stringing lights up outside, plus you got your heater going inside, plus you got your Christmas tree, plus everybody else in the block is doing the same thing, you don't want to be responsible for rolling brownouts or whatever. So you just contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
One of the new movies opening today is the animated feature Megamind. It features the voice of Will Ferrell as an evildoer. Megamind opens at over 3,900 theaters across the U.S. and Canada.
Megamind.
Oh, bravo, Metro.
I have no idea what this movie is.
I don't think anyone does. I've seen the trailer, and I've seen the commercials for it, and it appears that...
is this a contract-fulfilling movie?
I think it... Well, it might be wonderful. It might be hilarious. I haven't actually read any reviews of it yet. It's just... I think it strikes me as a movie that was probably very difficult to explain easily. It looks like it's about, like, an evil-doing villain guy... played by Will Ferrell, who has to become a good doer for some reason.
Who is this from? What studio made this? I mean, it's not like a Pixar film, obviously,
no,
and it's like a DreamWorks thing?
It might
or
be DreamWorks.
All right.
I really don't know as much about it as I
Boy,
ought.
Do you know, DreamWorks, are they just not the perpetual winners of the Suck It Award, you know, as given out by Pixar every year? It doesn't matter what DreamWorks, has there ever been a more salient example of the Salieri to someone else's Mozart in modern times?
I know, exactly. And the DreamWorks animations are, their animated movies are, for the most part, really good.
Oh, they're really good. They're just not Pixar. I've just got to chafe at them like nobody's business.
Yeah.
And, you know, and freaking Jeffrey Katzenberg must just sit there and just... He must just sit there with like a John Lasseter voodoo doll and just whiz on it. Just every night, just desperately hoping to turn that tide around. And it just didn't quite happen.
Well, I will just say this as a former and sometimes current film critic. I'm qualified to give this advice. If you are going to go see a movie this weekend, don't go see Due Date. I saw it on Monday and it blows.
Done and done.
So,
All right. So
Megamind, you might as well give it a try because it's not Due Date.
There's something else that's opening this weekend that I thought I cared about. Wait,
is that Russell Crowe movie opening this weekend or is that later?
That might be the thing I'm thinking about, but then again, maybe that's not this weekend. I still haven't even seen that. I meant to see Saw 3D last weekend and I didn't. So I got to. And my wife she's already preemptively told me that I'll be seeing that alone. By the way, unless you want to go,
I sort. Yeah, sure.
Are you kidding?
Why not?
I was just effing with you. I only asked because I thought you were going to say no. Damn.
Nah. Well, I don't really care, but it's like, I don't know. I'm semi-curious.
You haven't seen the first six, have you?
No, I only saw the first one and I hated it.
I was going to say it would make no sense, but I mean, really, no. It's not like you're going to a Saw film to see that.
I just started watching the new-ish Piranha movie, though.
The new Piranha film is awesome.
I missed in the theater, and now that I'm watching it, like, on my computer, I'm, like, really sorry I didn't see it in the theater because the way the setups for the 3D and stuff are hilarious.
How far into the movie are you?
I don't know. Elizabeth Shue's running around doing things. They're I think the kids are wading into the water.
But there's only like one. Like you're about halfway through.
I'm about halfway through.
So they're out on the river with O'Connell.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Piranha 3D. It's really good. Really, really a good film. It is. Here's the thing I will say about, and we got to wrap it up, but here's the thing about Piranha 3D. Piranha 3D is what we all hoped Snakes on a Plane would be.
Yeah. We should talk about this a little bit in the next hour because I'm really enjoying it. I have a few observations.
I like your segue. Well done. All right. That's Don Taylor right there as we wrap up another exciting installment of Legion of News. All right, this week. It is Friday, November 5th, 2010. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show is next with our 100th episode. That is at rickemerson.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. We will see you again Monday at noon for... Is that Kit Kat Dark?
That's a dark chocolate Kit Kat, my friend.
I'll trade you some ham chips for that.
Sure.
Awesome. We'll see you Monday at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Have a satisfying and safe weekend, won't you?